let's take a closer look at what's in and what's out of the nearly 6,000-page COVID relief package that just made its way through Congress.
It's good for Illinois. In fact, it's very good.
That's Democratic Senator Dick Durbin. I'm Dana Vollmer, and this is WGLT's The Leadoff.
Support for The Leadoff on WGLT and WGLT.org comes from the Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington, now offering nonstop flights to Detroit on Delta Airlines. The Motor City is just one flight away. Schedules and information at CIRA.com.
It's Wednesday, December 23rd. Coming up, what you need to know to start your day. It's The Leadoff from WGLT Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Now, let's lead off with Illinois' congressional delegation's support for the $900 billion COVID relief package. Ryan Denham has more.
Senator Dick Durbin voted yes on the package, as did Senator Tammy Duckworth and Bloomington Normal Congressmen Rodney Davis and Darren LaHood. Durbin spoke to reporters yesterday.
It is a dramatic bill. It includes the omnibus spending bill for the next year, as well as this COVID relief bill of some $900 billion and several other measures that have been waiting for passage. It's good for Illinois. In fact, it's very good.
The package includes $300 a week for unemployment benefits for nearly 400,000 Illinoisans and up to $600 in direct payments for adults and children. One thing not included is direct relief aid for states, cities, and small units of government. Durbin says the Biden camp has a different position than the Trump administration on that issue, and it could come back later.
The difficulty, if we don't, is that these units of government will have to lay off firefighters, policemen, healthcare workers, teachers. That's exactly the wrong thing at this moment in history.
Republicans have argued direct state aid is a bailout for blue states with pension problems. Republicans, meanwhile, were disappointed the package did not include liability protection for businesses operating during the pandemic. Durbin says negotiators could not agree on precise language for that issue, but he does not dismiss the concern.
I'm ready to help businesses. We want to make sure that we give them an opportunity if they have done their best and followed the standards that were publicized and tried to protect their employees and their customers, then they shouldn't have to worry about a lawsuit.
Durbin says only a few hundred such lawsuits have been filed in the U.S. He says it's tough to prove responsibility for someone getting sick when the virus is invisible and widespread. Reporting with Charlie Schlenker, I'm Ryan Denham.
Here are some other stories we're following in the WGLT newsroom. McLean County's COVID testing positivity rate continues to fall, down to 7.9%. That's the lowest it's been since before Thanksgiving. Hospitalizations are also on the decline. Rivian founder and CEO RJ Scaringe is now based at the Normal manufacturing plant where electric vehicles will be made. He was previously based in Southern California. And the city of Bloomington will get $175,000 from a new state community revitalization program. It can be used to rehab abandoned and blighted housing. Find more on these stories at WGLT.org. The Illinois Constitution turned 50 years old this month. Longtime journalist Charlie Wheeler covered the convention where it was written in 1970. IPR Sean Crawford talked with him about the document and its legacy.
At the time, people referred to the existing Constitution, which was drafted and ratified way back in 1870, as a Constitution for the horse and buggy age. Some of the things were totally irrelevant anymore. There was language in there about the Columbian Exposition. There was a provision in the old Constitution that said if the state wanted to borrow more than $250,000, it had to ask the voters in a referendum. By the time you reached the turn of the century, $250,000 wasn't very much. Even back in the 1900s, it was pretty clear that this Constitution just needed to be updated and rewritten from beginning to end. The people who drafted the document in 1970 were aware of the constraints that the old charter had placed on the state, and so they tried to set out kind of a broad general framework and then allow it to the General Assembly and future generations to fill in the details, I guess would be one way to look at it. If you were to read through the Constitution, you'll see many places where it says, as provided by law. And that meant that the delegates were saying, here's kind of the grand scheme, but it's up to the General Assembly to fill in the details.
In your article, you say the 1970 Constitution made state government more efficient. What did you mean by that?
I think it clarified the roles, if you will, of the three branches of government. Under the old Constitution, for example, the lieutenant governor was the presiding officer over the Senate. Well, the delegates wanted to make sure the executive and the legislative were separated, and instead the Senate now elects its own president. They also clarified the budgeting. They made it clear that the governor proposes the budget, and then the legislature reacts, and the governor has the ability to reduce items, to strike items out with a veto. The legislature has the final word in that they can restore anything that he cut. It made it clear that we could have annual sessions.
One key decision that was made was to only allow for a flat income tax. This topic has come up this year because Governor J.B. Pritzker had pushed for a graduated income tax system, but voters said no. Why was it written that way?
I think one of the overriding concerns of the delegates was whatever we do, we want it to be something that voters will be happy to ratify. And I think they were very much aware of the fact that there had been a prior convention in the 1920s whose product was rejected by the voters. And so there was always this concern.
The residents of the state have had a chance a couple of times to decide if they want another constitutional convention. They've turned down that idea twice. But some say they'd like to see it, reopening issues for discussion that others have pushed against. You mentioned the public employee unions as a good example of an issue when it comes to pension protections. Do you think we'll see another constitutional convention anytime soon? The next opportunity, I guess, to consider that and to possibly vote on it, I guess, would be 2028.
Yeah, that is correct. Delegates in 1970 were very aware of the fact that we don't want to lock the future into what we do today, because who knows what tomorrow is going to bring. And so every 20 years, as you say, the voters get asked. In 2008, 2/3 of the voters said, no, we don't need another convention. And the next one would be in 2028. Based on that trend, I don't think people are going to accept it.
That's journalist Charlie Wheeler speaking with Sean Crawford. Before we let you go, a heads up that this podcast will be on hiatus starting tomorrow and through the holidays. We'll be back with you every morning starting Monday, January 4th. That's it for today. Support for WGLT's The Leadoff comes from the Central Illinois Regional Airport in Bloomington, now offering nonstop flights to Detroit on Delta Airlines. The Motor City is just one flight away. Schedules and information at CIRA.com.